Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube. YouTube.com/Stu does America. It's convenient because it would be weird if we had some other name for the YouTube page. Audrey Fahlberg is here from National Review with her latest excellent coverage of Jay Jones and his issues, I guess you'd call them, out in Virginia. Cuomo and Mamdani are butting heads again in New York. We'll see what's got them hot and bothered. But we're going to start by doing October 7th, 2 years later. As you know, October 7th is it's one of those days that you know by the date. Someone says October 7th, you immediately know what they're talking about. And of course, I am referring to Amazon Prime Day. Yeah, woo! Prime days are back, October 7th and 8th. Lots of deals. Anyone sitting around the conference table say, we really want to promote to October 7th? I mean, isn't that kind of like, you know, maybe like 2 years after 9/11 when we'd be like, hey, big sale coming up on 9/11? It just doesn't seem right. I mean, it's been a long time now. Maybe you can get away with that. October 7th, pretty fresh, though, only a couple of years ago. You'd at least think that someone like maybe Elon Musk would have sensitivities to recognize this date. Teaser, October 7th. What's happening on October 7th? October 7th is a new release of something. We don't know what it is yet on Tesla. Some people are saying it might be a new model of car. But again, certainly no negative intent by this. But it was kind of weird, right, that this was going on. I also found this one a little strange. LeBron James tweeting, the decision of all decisions, October 7th. Noon Eastern, the second decision is the hashtag. And I'm a little concerned that he might be invading Israel just based on the date choice. Hopefully LeBron not going to do that. I mean, he's done worse things. He's one of the worst people in the world. But I mean, I don't think he's going to do that. By the way, here's the video they released to promote this.
I think we go through the West Bank.
That's how that conversation starts. No, I don't. By the way, we did find out LeBron's second decision, which is an ad campaign. Because, of course, it's an ad campaign from LeBron James. By the way, Hennessy is the company, and they're going to be doing a limited edition orange bottle featuring James' name on the label. So, what better way to honor the memories of those killed on October 7th? Anyway, a divided Israel marks 2 years since October 7th attack as war in Israel grinds on and hostages language. It is a really rough time, right? It's a very difficult time for Israel, a difficult time in the region. Everyone trying to figure out a way out of this, right? That's what they're trying to do. And people have made up their minds, or at least their minds are changing all the time. You know, there was a 2-3 week period where people said, you know, we kind of feel bad for Israel and all those people who were murdered and raped. And then that just, of course, slid away. That was gone pretty quickly. And we've moved on with the help, by the way, of the Chinese Communist Party. Thank you so much to China for this. TikTok posts on Israel-Gaza war are overwhelmingly, you're going to be surprised to hear this, pro-Palestinian. Yes, U.S.-based TikTok posters still show overwhelming support for Palestinians as the war rages in Gaza. According to a report published Tuesday by the Nonpartisan Research Center, Cybersecurity for Democracy, my favorite cybersecurity nonpartisan research center there. It found out that for every pro-Israel post that appeared on TikTok in September, there were roughly 17 posts supporting Palestinians. That finding, based on an analysis of hashtags that users attached to their post, is roughly the same as what the center found nearly 2 years ago. So it hasn't really changed. It's been a nonstop barrage of Free Palestine and nobody defending Israel. Now, if you remember, we highlighted the letter Charlie Kirk sent to Benjamin Netanyahu a few months before he was killed. This was kind of his big complaint. Right? Like, you guys aren't doing anything. You're not out there defending yourself. You have nobody out there who's giving your message and making sure people understand what's really going on in Israel between Israel and Gaza. You're not doing anything, and you can't leave it up to people like me who are fans of Israel to do it. You need to do it yourself. You need to get out there a little bit more. That was the crux of his letter. And unfortunately, they don't seem to have taken his advice, at least yet. And what is the result of that? Like, what's the result of when you go on social media, which we now have decided to spend, what, 8-10 hours a day on, and you see 17-1 messaging against Israel? What do you think happens? What's the result of something like that? Could it be this? Many American Jews sharply critical of Israel and Gaza, post-poll finds. The Washington Post doing this poll. There's a lot of questions about Israel, and the back and forth has been pretty prominent. We all know the lines here. Is Israel committing genocide? One of the big questions. Do they commit war crimes against Gaza? Well, a lot of American Jews think so. Jews, not big fans of Jews right now. Mm-hmm. Most American Jews say Israel has committed war crimes against Palestinians. About 4 in 10, 40% say Israel has committed genocide. The question is, do you think Israel has committed war crimes against Palestinians? 61-29 is the margin there. Do you think Israel has committed genocide against Palestinians in Gaza? It is a no, but still not by much. 51% say no, that's not genocide. 39% say it is. Now, despite the fact that they've, you know, a couple of these organizations have come out and said, yeah, it's genocide, it does not match any of the previously agreed upon definitions of genocide. There are specific genocide definitions. We went over this on a monologue, I don't know, a couple months ago. What's the actual definition of this word as they look at it when they've used these terms to describe conflicts in the past? Not even remotely close. Famine and genocide does not check those boxes. But again, this isn't really about the truth, right? It's about how to frame this in a way that's negative for Israel. That is 100% what's going on in social media and much of the regular media as well. American Jews are convinced by this. American Jews are much more critical of Benjamin Netanyahu's leadership. Overall, how would you rate his leadership in 2020? It was 40% excellent, 26% good, 28% poor, and 6% had no answer. One of the things that's interesting here, because you will note if you're looking at these charts, Chartapalooza here on Stu Does America Today, Conserva Nerds Unite. If you're on podcast, you'll see a drop off from 2020 to 2025. From 40% to 32%, so a decrease, and a decrease from 26% to 20% on the people who said his leadership was good. A massive increase in people who say it was poor, from 28% to 48%. Another thing that's interesting about this poll is, in 2020, 6% of people were like, I'm not sure, I'm a little mixed on how he is. There's nobody unsure anymore, apparently. Now that is nobody. There's nobody who is no opinion on this matter. That's I guess not shocking, but it is there. How connected are American Jews feeling to Israel? 76% of Jews in America say Israel's existence is vital for the long-term future of the Jewish people. It's really just a question of whether Israel exists or not, if there's any important to its existence. About 20-some-odd percent, I mean 24%, unless there are people who skip the question, 24% say, no big deal, whatever. Israel is a thing or it's not a thing, whatever. Do you have a lot of common with Jews in Israel? 58% said yes. Are you connected emotionally to Israel? 56% say yes. Now, I mean, you know, like that's a question where, you know, you're an American, you're going about your life. Maybe you're not feeling all that connected. I mean, I have Swedish and Italian blood in me. Do I feel connected to either of those countries? Not really. I'm just an American. Sweden, you did some good things during the COVID period, I thought. Italy, food, fantastic. Other than that, not really much thought going into the Swedish meatballs. When I was at IKEA, occasionally I would have that thought. But that's really about it about those two countries. So I can kind of understand that. Not everyone's going to be fascinated with this. Of course, neither Italy nor Sweden in the middle of a constant conflict. And typically, Italians and Swedes not necessarily seen as the victims of constant attempts at genocide. So, I mean, I think it would be a little bit more, maybe more closely felt. A share of American Jews in the U.S. saying the U.S. is too supportive of Israel. Are we too, do we care too much about Israel? Fascinating question. That was only a 10%. In 2013, that's now risen to 32%, so over three times as many people. And of course, the other categories, not supportive enough, has fallen, and the level of the support is about right has fallen as well. Most American Jews have voicing concern over Israeli hostages. This is at least maybe some good news. Are you still concerned about Israeli hostages being held by Hamas? 79% said yes, very concerned. 14% said they're somewhat concerned. It does leave 7% that aren't concerned about the hostages, which is kind of a high number. You feel like that number should be closer to, I don't know, zero. The threat Hamas poses to Israel, is that a concern for you? About 85% say it is in one form or another. Civilian deaths in Gaza, it's about 86% saying yes, they're concerned about that. And the safety of Israeli soldiers in Gaza, they're not quite as concerned about that. About 80% say yes to that question. American Jews say Hamas and Netanyahu bear a great deal of responsibility for the continuation of the Gaza war. This is interesting. So, like, who's responsible for this war? Why does it keep going on? Well, still, people say Hamas is more to blame. 72% say a great deal to blame, and another 19% say a good amount. So you're at 91% there. But Benjamin Netanyahu is very close behind. He's at 86%. Israel itself is at 80%. And the United States, I mean, I don't know why we're held responsible for everything, but we're at, 61% of people say, yeah, they've got a decent amount of responsibility. Now, who's to blame here? And I guess you want to make sure there's at least some good news coming out of this poll, and I think there is some. American Jews look at this and say, who's to blame? They're not blaming Israeli Jews for being murdered and raped. At least not entirely, not all of them are. Hamas is more to blame. 68% of people said that. 32% said Israel's military for bombing buildings where civilians live and work. Which again, we'll get into this in a second, but what would we do in this situation? It's a fascinating thought experiment. What would we do? Last one, where does this go from here? When the war ends, would each of the following be acceptable or unacceptable? If the elected government by Palestinians in Gaza is the most popular answer, 62% said that would be mostly acceptable. Remember, when they voted last time, they voted for Hamas. So I don't know if that's actually something you want. Governed by a group of existing Arab nations, this is the Trump peace plan, about 45%, the second most popular. Next up, the Palestinian Authority, 31%. Governed by Israel is right around the same, about 35%. Governed by Israel is right around the same, about 35%. And again, to note, that one sounds like, gosh, governed by Israel, who would say that? First of all, there's people who are aggressive and hawkish against Hamas, people in Israel who are, you know, if you want to call them, in our world, sort of the conservatives would say, hey, yeah. And you know why they would say that? Because it's part of their country. That's why. It's like asking the American people, what do you think about the United States ruling over New Mexico? I don't know. Yes. We're not going to just ship that off to somebody else. I don't know. Seems reasonable. And finally, governed by Hamas, people not too into that. Only a couple percent believe it. You know what? I think we should try. Let me just throw this one out here to you. What if we let Hamas run it again? See what happens. Not many people in Israel or in America saying yes to that one. So lots of poll numbers I threw at you there. But what does it all mean? We do have some developments in this world. Israel and Hamas delegations are holding indirect talks on ending the 2-year war in Gaza after both sides signal support for U.S. President Donald Trump's peace plan. Imagine if he solves Middle Eastern peace. I want it to happen because it's really good for all the people there, but also just to see the media react to it would be hilarious. Would he get the Nobel Peace Prize then? I don't know. That would be hilarious to see. The talks in Egypt's Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh, which is very nice. I have a timeshare there, are being advanced by the U.S. and mediated by Qatar and Egypt, an aim at hammering out details for the plan's first phase. That includes a ceasefire to allow for the release of all remaining hostages held by Hamas in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners in Israel. And of course, that's always true. Like if the Israelis get five hostages, they have to give up 500. And when that happens, The left then complains that it's not fair because you're saying Jewish lives are more important than Palestinian lives. So that's just so you know, that's how that will play out when it occurs. This, by the way, I want to reiterate this because I said it the other day. The great move, I think, by Donald Trump, the way he handled this. And, I, there are sometimes I really think Donald Trump does a great job on stuff. Sometimes I'm like, honestly, not my cup of tea. On this particular instance, this has been really well handled. And what he did is he came out, he negotiated something that he could be comfortable with and Israel could be comfortable with and kind of just did it on their own and then came out and did a big press conference and said, hey, peace is here. I guess Hamas has to agree with this, right? Can someone ask Hamas, did Hamas agree to this? So now all the pressure is on Hamas, whether they're going to agree or not. Now, Hamas are a bunch of terrorists. They're not necessarily going to go along with those pressures, but at least they are considering it. Maybe it happens. At the very least, it does open up, I think, to the rest of the world, some clearance for Israel to continue what they're doing to try to wipe out Hamas. That was the agreement. Trump said, look, if they don't come along, if they don't agree to get rid of these hostages out of their dungeons, at least give us the remains of the people they have left. At the very least, you're going to have a situation where the pressure's on Hamas to make a decision, and the focus isn't all on Israel all the time. So I do think that was a very smart move by Trump. Now, it's sort of this type of thing he did in Ukraine. He kind of went with Russia and said, hey, we found a deal. We got it. We're all wrapped up. Just got to get Ukraine to agree. And Ukraine kind of came on board, and then Russia kind of flaked on it. So we'll see if this continues. But look, war is awful. War is terrible. I mean, we saw this again in the Charlie Kirk letter. We saw this in texts that have been released over the past day or two. Sure, you know, everybody, I think, on the right is concerned about how Israel's handling this and how their government is messaging it. Sometimes there are pressures that Charlie talked about where donors and people who are very pro-Israel, I think with good intent, are angry at anybody who shows any dissent. And you should be able to dissent. You should be able to be critical of Israel's government. But I think a lot of times this idea that they're being too aggressive in this particular war kind of belies the idea that, you know, there's something else going on here. And, I think to how the United States would react to a situation like this. Like, can you imagine if something like this happened, Mexico crossed the border, Mexican troops came across the border and started attacking people in our Southwest. How would we react to that? And I think about, you know, how we reacted to 9/11, right? We went over, war in Afghanistan, war on terror all across the globe, add in Iraq after that, that while it wasn't exactly about 9/11, was sort of about the war on terror in general. And all those things happened. It was massive, trillions of dollars spent, all sorts of, blood and treasure went into those efforts because we weren't going to put up with that. And while we knew the sympathies would fade eventually, it was important for us to do what we thought was necessary. Some of that worked, some of it didn't. I think the same thing you could say about Israel here, right? And if you look at, and I come back to this often, but if you look at the proportional levels of death and destruction that happened on October 7th to the community in Israel, and put that to the scale of the United States, what does that look like? By latest count, the attacks on Hamas, this is a couple of years old, the Arabic acronym for the Islamic Resistance Movement, killed more than 1,300 Israelis and third country nationals, including at least 29 Americans. An amazing part of this that doesn't get enough attention. In a country whose population is less than 10 million. In America, that would be the equivalent of killing nearly 40,000 people, 13 times more than the number of Al-Qaeda victims on 9/11. Let's just say that again. 29 Americans were killed or taken hostage here. This is a massively devastating attack just to us, let alone what happened to Israel. If Mexico came into New Mexico and pulled into Santa Fe and started murdering and raping people to the score of 40,000 people, we would be an island. There'd be a giant gap of ocean between us and Honduras. That, like, we would never stop making sure that that never occurred again. We would go on and on and on and on and on and on, and I would be here telling you it was the right thing to do. Why? Because it is the right thing to do. You have to make sure you're not taken advantage of this again. Remember, Israel had control of this area, gave it up, gave control to the Palestinian people, and what do? They voted in Hamas. And then Hamas did this. By the way, Greta is okay. I want you to know, at least we have all this tragedy, but Greta is okay. Greta Thunberg is cheered on by the crowd as she gets back to Athens after the flotilla number 94 is turned back by Israel. Of course, this has happened over and over again. They get on these flotillas, they broadcast to everyone, "Ah, we're coming, here we come. Israel's like, "We know they're coming, we're gonna stop them because they're not allowed to do this." They stop them, they give them sandwiches, they smile at the soldiers until they know they're on camera, and then they get on a plane and they are shipped back to Europe, and then they act like terrible things happen. No exception here. Greta Thunberg alleges mistreatment in Israeli custody. Here is Greta talking about it.
"And we are now many who are safe and released from imprisonment and absurd mistreatment, but many of our comrades from Global Smooth Flotilla are not, and they need to be released now. But most importantly, we are not the story."
She is not the story, she said on social media. By the way, here's another photo of her not being the story. Shockingly, in front of 9 zillion microphones, which is just the way this works. There's a lot to talk about over the last couple of years, a lot to talk about what's coming in the future. This is not going to be easy for anybody, okay? War sucks. It really does. But it's important to understand, on October 7th, Hamas did not cross that border and break through those fences and go and parachute in to murder a bunch of people. That was not their goal. And I know it sounds weird. Certainly, they liked murdering a lot of those people. They enjoyed it. They called home to mommy and daddy and said, "I killed lots of Jews, 10 Jews by my own hands." They were very excited about it. It was a wonderful side benefit to their goal. But their goal there was not to even kill a bunch of Jews. It wasn't even to certainly attempt to have a military victory over the military of Israel. They knew they had no chance of doing that. They knew their only chance was to go in there and cause such damage, such brutal, awful damage, that Israel would have no choice but to come back and absolutely attempt to annihilate them and keep going and keep going. And when everyone said, "Hey, maybe you're going too far," they would keep going and keep going. And of course, they knew that because they watched little children get murdered in front of their parents, women raped, bodies beheaded, all the terrible things we've heard about, some of them true, some of them not, who knows. But we know a lot of damage was done, and we know it was very memorable and horrible for the people of Israel. And the reason they did that was not because they wanted to die in an attack, although they believe they're being martyred, I suppose. The reason they did that is because they knew eventually, after probably a couple of weeks, the world would start turning against Israel, because this is always what happens. They turn against Israel. The media turns against Israel. The social media turns against Israel. Politicians turn against Israel. Europe turns against Israel. Everybody turns against Israel. We know this from the United Nations, right? Every vote is usually it's Israel and us, and that's about it, on one side and everybody else on the other. That's the way this works. They knew this would happen. This is what they wanted. And when countries like England and Germany and France come together and be like, "We're going to give them a Palestinian state now," they're being rewarded for their actions. This is exactly what they hoped would occur. When they decided, "We're going to go rape and murder innocent people," they knew this was going to be the outcome unless people had a spine. And what's happened here is we found out, once again, they don't. In fact, they seem to be cheering for Hamas. We have a contingency in our own Congress. It's like the Hamas wing of the Democratic Party. And this continues and continues and continues. And honestly, Donald Trump seems to be the only one with any sort of line. He seems to be the only one who cares what happened to Israel anymore. And it's okay to be critical of Israel. It's okay to be critical of things they've done in this war, their approaches here and there, of course. But at the end of the day, the current behavior of the world is a giant reward for the quote-unquote warriors of Hamas. We're 2 years into this, and even the Jews in America are like, "Yeah, I can kind of see their point." That's wrong. You know, it's one of those things that even if they had a good point, this would not be the time to reward it. And I stand by this. If they will not come around here, after Trump is giving them yet another off-ramp to give up these hostages and end this thing, if they won't do it now, they probably never will. And Israel should be free to do whatever they deem necessary. There's certain things we kind of all depend on, right? We think to ourselves like, ah, that'll always be there, right? The pharmacy, for example. It's always going to be there. It's always going to have the medicines I need. This is America. We get what we need. We get what we want, right? Well, sometimes there's also supply chains, and sometimes there's also natural disasters, and sometimes there's systems that can fail, and the access that you need to these things can disappear, sometimes overnight. And that's why Jace Medical exists. They help you prepare for the kinds of medical disruptions you can't predict by giving you access to emergency supplies of the medications your family relies on most. We're talking about, you know, real prescriptions and dispensed by real doctors and real pharmacists for a curated set of essential antibiotics and other long-term use medications, enough to get you the kind of situation that you need in a tough spot, right? Like when everyone else is scrambling, what are you doing? Well, you're calm, you're prepared. And it's not just about pandemic-level crisis. It's about hurricanes and power outages and cyber attacks and all the stuff that can suddenly make your local pharmacy unreachable. Jace lets you prepare ahead of time while everything is calm so that when the chaos hits, you're completely ready. Go to jace.com, enter the promo code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at jace.com, jase.com, promo code STU.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Tchibo-Filiale und auf tchibo.de.
Well, the biggest story in politics this week comes out of Virginia, and it has to do with Jay Jones. He's the guy running for attorney general on the Democratic side in Virginia. And the person who broke that story is Audrey Fahlberg. She's political reporter for National Review. She has the bombshell piece out this week. It's Dem AG nominee Jay Jones fantasized about shooting former Virginia GOP speaker. He receives both bullets. Just quaint. Be sure to check out that story. And Audrey joins us now. Audrey, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I appreciate it. I mean, this is a massive story, obviously shaking the world of politics. How does a story like this come together?
It's so funny. I keep talking. I'm so frustrated that some people are calling this an opposition research dump. Just like I was handed this, you know, a couple of days ago. No, this took a ton of work. I had heard about this several months ago, but I was trying to be tactful in how I approached it because it was difficult to actually get the goods. And I did not actually get screenshots of these text messages until last week. But, you know, it's really important to understand what the context of this story, because so many of the text messages were so disturbing. But this was an August 2022 conversation with Jay Jones, who was a former legislator at the time. Remember, he had resigned from his House delegate seat the prior year, you know, before sending these text messages. He sent them to a GOP legislator. And what was the context of that conversation? Well, it was his frustration with the reality that Republican state legislators were eulogizing a recently deceased Democratic former House delegate. So he was so frustrated that Republicans were saying nice things about this deceased, centrist moderate Democrat that he decided to express those feelings to somebody else. He accidentally texted this woman named Carrie. He said, oh, I meant to send that to somebody named Mark. But then he continued to double down, suggesting that, you know, joking about how if he died, how would Republicans eulogize him, and then saying extremely disturbing things about, you know, wanting to violence against not only that then House Virginia Speaker, who's a Republican, Todd Gilbert, but also his children. One thing that I think is interesting now is, you know, obviously there's few, if any, Virginia Democrats have called on him to withdraw. We're not seeing nationwide calls from other high-profile national Democrats for him to withdraw. Instead, there's this kind of condemn and move on strategy. And Democrats are hoping that, I mean, essentially early voting has already started. Tens of thousands of Virginians have voted. So they don't really have a strategy for him to withdraw. That you kind of have to keep him on the ballot. That's the current kind of thinking right now among Democrats.
It really is an incredible story, especially because, as you point out, You know, we've all probably texted the wrong person. Very few death threats I've texted to other people, but you know, occasionally you text the wrong person, you make a mistake like that. If you catch yourself, if you're talking to a person you don't think would be accepting to whatever, if you want to call it dark humor, normally as a human being, you would stop yourself. If I have the chronology of this right, he texted the wrong person. He then doubled down on the threats and then called her to clarify it. And then after he called her to clarify, continued to text her. Did all this actually happen, Audrey?
Right. So it did all happen because, and a really important thing to remember here, he has not denied any of this. Mm. I sent him a press inquiry, his team a press inquiry about this at 8:46 in the morning, the day my story ran, gave him an 11 a.m. deadline, which, you know, is pretty generous. He knew it was coming. The story didn't run for another 2 hours. I tried to get in touch with his spokeswoman, left voicemails, texted her. I was like, I need to make sure that you saw this so you're prepared for the story. They knew it was coming. Instead of giving, they just did not give me a comment for the story. Instead, they went to another outlet, attacked my outlet, attacked his Republican opponent, and called this, you know, a smear from Trump-controlled media. You know, what's fascinating here is he didn't say the words, I'm sorry, in that statement. He said, now, like everybody else, I regret text messages. He didn't actually say, I'm sorry, in that statement. And, you know, Democrats actually picked up on that. I was actually, before this TV hit, I was speaking with somebody who was involved in the fundraising for Jay Jones. And that person told me that Democrats are furious. People had invested so much money in Jay Jones. And, you know, not only just to have the ego to run for such a high profile, you know, this is the top cop in Virginia, to know that you have this on you and to continue to run. And then also to have the audacity when this story comes out to not really apologize until about 8 p.m. the night, the night the story came out, to really issue a more serious apology. So that's what Democrats are telling me today.
It's very, very strange. And we talked to his opponent, the attorney general, currently earlier on today. And one of the things that struck me as I was talking to him was, through your reporting, we discovered that he had this sort of joyful celebration, potentially, of these children dying, which is an incredibly dark thing to do. But one of the things I think has been undersold, perhaps, in all of this is his motivation for that, which was he wanted to cause personal pain, to his political opponent, because that's the only way they will change their policies, their evil ways, if you will. It's such a fascinating thing that he's running for the chief law enforcement officer of the state. I mean, someone with the power to do things like cause personal pain for people for all sorts of dark reasons. I mean, are people realizing that this could be a really dangerous move for the state of Virginia?
He could actually still win. Like I said, early voting began September 19th, I believe. Thousands of Virginians have already voted. Right now, he has no plans to withdraw, and that's in part because, you know, a lot of Democrats probably feel that they would essentially be ceding the election to Republicans. There's not really a strategy to rally around everybody else. But you're right. And another thing is, he sent these texts in 2022. At the time, I believe his wife had just recently given birth to one of his, you know, his first kid. So he was a father at the time he sent these texts. He's 36 years old now. He had already served in elected office. But just to go back to what you said earlier, I mean, everybody sends texts that they regret. That's true. But the point here is that he doubled down and speaking to somebody who was pushing back in the conversation, kept saying, Jay, please stop. This is not acceptable rhetoric. And then he called her to double down even more. Like, that's astonishing. And it's not like these were evening drunk texts. These were texts that he began sending at 8 a.m. So early morning thoughts for this guy.
Yeah, that's a heck of a way to wake up in the morning. It was just a fascinating thing, because you're right that the resistance there. I mean, I think it's another thing that maybe all of us have done, and maybe made a joke or a comment that isn't well received in a group text. You usually get that signal. He didn't seem to get it. And, you know, you think of a person acting this way, particularly not even to a friend, right? This isn't a situation where he was necessarily to an ally, at least. that later broke up, maybe changed parties, and it got reported to the press. This is someone who's on the in the opposite party he's texting all this to. Have you talked to any Democrats who looked at this and are concerned about the vetting issue here? Like, why wasn't this caught before this guy got this nomination?
Yes. I spoke to the person I spoke to, about 30 minutes ago, said this. They're really frustrated that this wasn't caught earlier. And also just, again, that he had the audacity to run knowing that he sent these texts. And, you know, maybe the more concerning thing is he is somebody like who's sending texts that with this kind of rhetoric has probably done it before. Right. Mm. The fact that he was doubling down so much suggests that maybe he doesn't really see an issue with it, even if in his mind it's some sort of twisted joke. But another thing to remember here is Virginia has had its fair share of political scandals, as I'm sure you know too well. I'm a native Virginian, went to college in Virginia. So we all remember the Ralph Northam blackface scandal. And, you know, what happened then? A lot of elected Democrats called on him to resign, right, including none other than Abigail Spanberger, who I believe was a congresswoman at the time. You know, this is a different political scandal, but I think we can all agree that both are very bad. And, you know, that wishing violence on your political adversary and his children is beyond the pale. But again, Democrats have an election, and they're in a tricky spot with this one.
Yeah, I think those texts, suboptimal is the word I would use to describe them. You bring up Spanberger, which is an interesting part of this, because you're right. She called for the resignation of Northam. And at that time, you know, it was, I would say, the cool thing to do, right? Like, there's a lot of Democrats who were doing that. Of course, he didn't listen to any of those calls. This situation is much closer to an election. Is it just a pragmatism on their part to not call for this resignation? And do we think that this could affect the other races here? I mean, Sears is you know, a few points behind, doesn't seem to be, you know, the races have not been rated as highly competitive for whatever reason, despite the success of Youngkin. So what would you say is the effect of this on the other races?
That's the big question. So I actually wrote a piece in August on some of the tensions on the Republican ticket. Like you said, it's not seen as super competitive between Spanberger and Sears because, yes, Youngkin is very popular. Obviously, he had a blockbuster election cycle in 2022. I covered that very closely. That was a different time, though. Remember, you know, that was when critical race theory was the talk of the town. You know, there was a lot of parent frustration with the curriculum in schools and also masking. Now it's different. You know, Trump is in the White House. Sears has struggled to really present a clear message to voters beyond the defend and deliver message about what the successful Youngkin agenda, in her view. But there's been a little bit of tension between her and the lieutenant governor candidate. They didn't actually campaign together for a couple months for its kind of salacious story involving John Reed, the lieutenant governor, the allegations which he denies about kind of a racy Tumblr account. But beyond them, they've projected a more unified message in recent months. Look, it's going to be challenging for Sears to overcome some of those electoral, the current political environment. But, you know, what I'm hearing now is Spanberger is just trying to say, look, you know, she condemned his rhetoric, hasn't called on him to resign, but she's kind of cut the cord and she's just running her own race. That's what I'm being told.
Well, I will say, if you're going to be a political reporter right now in Virginia, seems to be a good place to be doing it. Plenty to keep you busy. Audrey Fahlberg, a political reporter for National Review. Thanks so much for your hard work on this story. I mean, I don't think anyone would have known this, and this guy could have just got right into office without a challenge. So thanks so much for your hard work. The piece is called Dem AG nominee Jay Jones fantasized about shooting former Virginia GOP speaker. He receives both bullets. You get all the text messages in there. All the stuff you've been hearing about this all came from Audrey. Audrey, thanks so much for your hard work and appreciate you coming on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
New poll out, 70% of voters oppose government shutdown. This is from The Hill in a Harvard-Harris poll released this week. Really, it's not a surprise. People don't like shutdowns. I like it, but most people don't. It's usually not a popular thing that goes on. The important thing, though, is who gets blamed for it. And right now it's pretty much split. 53% blamed Republicans, 47% blamed Democrats. Now, I don't know how. Honestly, I mean, Republicans are just like, we'll just keep spending at ridiculous levels for the foreseeable future. That's their position. Democrats are like, oh, gosh, well, you need to spend even more. And for some reason, the Republicans are more to blame. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how that works, but it seems to always work that way, doesn't it? Cuomo is ripping Mom Donnie for maintaining his Ugandan citizenship, citing the country's anti-gay policies. He says, why would you keep a citizenship in Uganda, which is a country that outlaws the LGBTQIA2+ community? Why be a citizen of that country? He says it's hypocrisy. Now, of course, Mom Donnie has had pictures, you know, with politicians there that was actually pushing for this policy. So it's not like a minor thing where he just happens to be from a country. And, you know, he's like posed like, you know, mugshots. Hey, everybody. Hey, mugging for the camera, at least with politicians that pitch these things. Because, again, Mom Donnie, I don't know what he thinks on that stuff. Honestly, he's very, very liberal. He's essentially a communist. Communists have had varying views, though, over outgroups. Sometimes they really hate them. Sometimes they embrace them. It's whatever really benefits them at any given moment. By the way, Americans not into the female president thing, according to a new poll. At least that's what Politico is saying. 4 in 10 Americans say they know someone who would not vote for a woman president, which is a weird way to ask a poll, right? It's not like, what would you do? And they say, I wouldn't vote for someone like that. They're saying, I know someone who would vote that way. Someone. They might not all the same guy. It might be Bob. It's all Bob. Bob won't vote for a female. Actually, I know somebody, Sarah Gonzalez. She always tells me she would never vote for a female president. So I know somebody, too. I'm going to show up in that poll. It's kind of a weird way to ask the poll. I will say this as well. It's a bad time to ask this question because you've just presented us with Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris as the options. When you think of female presidential candidates, that's who pops into your mind. They suck. That's not because women suck. That's because they, those two individual women, really suck. You know, if you had someone competent, someone that was good at their job, someone who wasn't unlikable, probably be a lot easier to get some people to say, yeah, sure, I'd vote for that person. That's the way it always is. It's about individuals at the end. But, you know, of course, we have to make these collective polls just to make sure everyone knows. Finally, U.S. liquor exports to Canada are dropping by 85%. Well, good! More for us! No, but the trade war thing is going to have these types of effects. If you're in this business, you're going to get hit hard by stuff like this. If you were exporting a lot of your goods, that's going to be a problem. I mean, we know that farmers are getting hit really, really hard by this right now. Our number one customer for soybeans is China, and it has been for a very, very long time. Starting at the end of last year, the purchasing amount of soybeans purchased from the United States from China started coming down. It has now hit, listen to this, levels, zero. Like, we do not sell one single soybean to the entire country of China anymore. They have now replaced their entire supply chain. And this is the issue with these tariffs that, doesn't get a lot of play. Yeah, it can make prices go up and those things happen. But when a country, when you have a relationship with a country and you're selling them all the stuff and they depend on you for it, and then you cut it, you're all of a sudden, I'm charging you three times as much. Well, they're like, well, I need to find it from somewhere else. And when this thing stops, when the whole heat of all this trade war stuff, hopefully at some point heals, they're not going to come back to you. They've already built a relationship with somebody else. They're getting it from there. And so I don't know what happens to the farmers. Right now, they're saying they're going to try to bail them out with some money. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but it's not a long-term solution to these problems. So we will see where this goes in the future. Okay, so here's what happened. Now, you do know it is a tough day. Today, October 7th, which of course is Amazon Prime Day. Yeah, Prime deals are back October 7th and 8th. Amazon Prime is in the news for other reasons. Why? Well, they have a bunch of movies. You can watch Prime Video, and they got lots of stuff. And they decided, hey, like, we're going to show, they got the rights to the Bond franchise. A lot of people are nervous that they're going to screw up the Bond franchise. And that's just ridiculous. There's no need to complain it or to worry about that, and no need to complain. Why? Well, I mean, sure, they're taking the guns out of the Bond movie. You didn't expect them to have guns in these movies, did you? These are the actual, like, posters for these movies. And they just, like, airbrushed out the guns that were in the hands of James freaking Bond. I mean, I don't know. After all the complaints they were getting and worries about what they might do with this franchise, this is the thing they do? It's insane. Happy Prime Day.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.